All statements, views, and opinions are personal and do not represent the United States government, the Department of War, or the United States Army. Welcome to the Insights from the Fight podcast, the show dedicated to bringing you lessons learned from exercises, operations, and Army fielded forces. I am your host, Mr. Jeremy Sturmer. Today we are speaking with Command Sergeant Major Christopher Prosser. Sergeant Major Prosser is a graduate of the Sergeant Major Academy, Class 60, has multiple combat tours as well as an operational deployment to Kosovo. He is currently serving as the Command Sergeant Major for 1st Army. Sergeant Major, thank you for joining us today. Can you please introduce yourself to our audience and share a brief overview of your military history?
Yeah, good morning. Chris Prosser, 1st Army Command Sergeant Major. I've been in position for almost 3 years now. Honored to be able to talk to you all today. I grew up in the Army as an armor crewman, a 19 series. I haven't been on a tank in a very long time. I've served in many different nominated positions, Mission Command Center of Excellence, White Sands Missile Range Command Sergeant Major, and then most recently, the 5th Corps Forward Command Sergeant Major position in Europe, where I get to spend a lot more time of my career working with NATO and working with allies. And my next position is as a Commandant of the U.S. Army NCO Academy, formerly known as the NCO Leadership Center of Excellence down at Fort Bliss, Texas, where I'll assume responsibility of that here late this summer.
1st Army partners with our Army National Guard and Army Reserve Forces to enable leaders and deliver trained and ready units for combatant commands. On order, they execute large-scale mobilizations, as well as construction and reconstruction to build the America's Army for combat. Can you tell us a little bit about your mission and that role as the premier trainers for those Reserve and National Guard soldiers?
I will tell you that being the 1st Army Command Sergeant Major is very eye-opening. So we go from a unit that is undermanned, undertrained, maybe has some systems, resource concerns, all the way to getting them to a P2, T2 status and getting them deployed globally. And that is 1st Army's mission. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about how we do that. And so 1st Army, our initial mission is obviously the Global Force Management Allocation Plan or GIFMAP mission, where we deploy certain units from Combo 2 and 3 across the world in support of combatant commands. And then you take our on-order missions of large-scale mobilization operations in support of large-scale combat operations that really puts us at the forefront of mobilizing 52% of the Army. For those who are not aware, 52% of the Army resides in components 2 and 3, which is Army National Guard and Army Reserve. And so our on-order mission following that, so if you start thinking of it as a Compo 1 is going to blow out and deploy Compo 2 and 3, we get them ready for whatever the tip bit is for that O plan. But then we also have a follow-on on-order missions of Constitution and Reconstitution. Constitution is done. It is the building of an echelon of a unit. For our perspective, World War II, the Army built 91 divisions to augment the ones that were existing to go and fight. That is 1st Army's responsibility now. 1st Army's responsibility is to build those divisions. Obviously, there would be some input from T2COM, from the personnel side, there would be some, from the DLA and Army Materiel Command side, there would be some the materiel and the equipment, but the training resides in 1st Army's hands. The other part of this is we have a responsibility to do reconstitution, which is taking a combat and effective unit off of the line, remanning, re-equipping, retraining, and then redeploying them back. And we would do that forward, depending on what theater. The great thing about what we do at 1st Army is we do that with a very small amount of people. 1st Army consists of observer, controller, trainers. That is who does these missions. So they do the GIFMAP mission every day, and they do the Constitution reconstitution in support of large-scale mobilization of large-scale combat operations. So 1st Army's mission, by law, is the Compo 2 and 3 readiness in the day-to-day, meaning that Global Force Management Allocation Plan or GIFMAP fight, but then it's compo agnostic once that initial responsibility is done. Our mission inside of the 1993 Title 11 NDAA makes us a multi-component headquarters, makes us very much a total Army, total force trainers and validators before you can send Booker.
So let's start diving into a couple of those. When you look at that role of helping National Guard or Army Reserve units train on their metal task so that they're proficient and ready to go to those combatant commands that they're assigned to, what are the things that you try to advise your subordinate teams and the training support battalions throughout the continental U.S. about how to best build relationships with those units so that they can put that training plan together and then execute it?
Yeah, so it's about being good partners early and often. But being a good partner for us means that we're grounded in doctrine. It means that we are masters of unit training management. It means being able to build relationships. It means understanding that we may not understand. And then being that linkage between that, it may be something as small as a chaplain detachment, all the way through the U.S. Army Reserve Command headquarters, and helping them to understand, hey, here's some of the challenges that they're facing. Because at the end of the day, our Army Reserves and Army National Guard are a strategic reserve, but they can employ like an operational reserve on a pretty constant basis. So sometimes resourcing doesn't match the requirement. In First Army, one of our responsibilities is to advocate for that. Again, going back to the unit training management piece, we have to understand what that looks like as you start talking about training horizons and validation requirements and all those other things to get someone validated for them to be able to go off and be certified as combat ready. That's First Army responsibility.
Okay, Sergeant Major, one of the challenges that you have is that when they're not fully mobilized, those guard and reserve components have a limited number of days to do the training that they've got to get through. I worked with the Mission Command Training Support Program for a couple years after I retired before coming here to work at Call. And, you know, that was always the challenge, is that you were trying to take a staff and prepare them to do MDMP over the course of one or two weekends. How do you look at those big training models and how to break those down into parts that the National Guard and the Reserve component can execute over a couple drill weekends in order to get to the proficiency that they need to be able to be ready to be mobilized?
Yeah, I think this goes back to exactly what we were just talking about when you start talking unit training management masters. The OCTs inside of First Army have to be masters and understand what that looks like. Taking things like Mission Command training and figuring out how to break that down into 39 days while also trying to help maintain all echelons of that command, right? So you start talking about building readiness from the bottom up and from the top down. And so how do you get that staff trained up within 39 days? It is absolutely, it's influencing that commander then having clear commander's training objectives on what they're trying to get after, what is their outcomes-based type of assessment, and then it's us being able to also be alongside them, assisting and advising, but then also helping them with an honest external evaluation. I think that's how First Army is able to help influence when you start talking about staff training or really any training. It's what does that commander want to get after to be able to become a more combat effective unit? And again, that may be a staff training exercise, or that may very well be a STICS exercise.
Okay, Sergeant Major, I'd like to kind of stay on that for a little bit. As you look at the cadre and the training support battalions that work for you with First Army, what kind of skills and competencies do you look for in your leaders? And what kind of training program have you developed in order to create those trainers who are able to go out and do that OCT mission on their own, probably with not a lot of guidance until you're at the point where they're trying to use those valuable days up?
What we see as the critical path for our OCTs to become straight out of an operational unit and be effective advisors, it starts with they got to be grounded in doctrine. They have to understand the COMPO 2 and 3 mission. For First Army, that is very specific to us. They have to be able to understand the rearm cycle or the training management cycle that those Guard and Reserve units go through. It's really that available year and then backward planning off that. And especially our priority obviously goes to the notification of sourcing units, the NOS units. Those ones that know that they're going somewhere. Second priority is the SURF units or the Contingency Readiness Force. Those ones are the priority. And then from there, it's the other units. But from a perspective of how do we train our trainers, for us, it starts with our OC Academy, which is across the street here at Rock Island Arsenal. Right? It's an NCO-run academy, and it is the standard for OC training in the Army. We work very closely with the CTCs, 196 JPM RC out of Hawaii. We work closely with JMRC out of Europe. And we are now working closely with JMRCP or Panama from Western HEMCOM to help for them to be able to continue to develop those capabilities, those OC capabilities. the way we see it is, just like any other training command, when it comes to being able to provide those external evaluators, you have it at MCTP right across the street there, is those OCs being grounded in doctrine. We've got to evaluate units based on objective measures. You know, we let commanders make those subjective decisions based on what we provide them. And I think it's absolutely critical that our NCOs and officers are out there with their expertise. The way I see expertise is it's a sum of their education, their training, and their experience. You add those things together, and that's where you come up with someone's expertise. And I think that that's what every good OC brings to. OCs across the Army, not just at First Army, possess a skill set. And so that's why in the last year, we were able to get the ASI approved for all OCTs. It's the ASI of Gulf One.
As you look at some of the challenges that you have as you're starting to work with the Guard and Reserve, when they show up at a major training center, obviously you're able to kind of to jump in, as you talked about, with JRTC or NTC or JPMRC. What are some of the challenges that your OCs have to deal with when they're not training at a major training center, when they're trying to go out to Gowan or at some Army National Guard camp in whatever state that they're near? Challenges with equipment, materials, or just creating that virtual environment for the trainers so that they can create a realistic fight for the soldiers?
This is something we talk about consistently because, as you said, when you go to a CTC, the backbone is there. You have the ability to watch movements through an instrumented system, the ability to be able to see the way that the fight is unfolding. Whereas if you go to Camp Parks or some of these other places that don't have that backbone, how are you able to provide effective feedback that's able to help them change either behavior or skill to be able to become more combat effective? I think that for us, we are always looking for exportable solutions. So the virtual battlefield system 4 is a virtual reality type of system that we could actually take to drills for the Army Reserve. And so we have to be able to look at things through an exportable lens. Having PLI or position locator instrumentation on soldiers is something that we are actually right now in the middle of working through. It's 2026. We have to be able to harness things like AI, and we have to be able to harness things like data. Green notebooks are great, but they're not going to get us to where I think we can be more efficient. So we're looking at how do we get these systems that we can take anywhere in the world and use them to be more effective, to give more feedback and more effective feedback to leaders to be able for them to make more decisions, for their units to be more lethal. And really, at the end of the day, that's what it is. But that's where we're at in our quest for capability on the edges and those places where we do not have that.
Okay, Sergeant Major, are there any particular initiatives that are either generated by First Army or that are being generated by other portions of the generating force that you're excited about to allow you to bring better training to soldiers into the future?
Yeah, 100%. I think we can start off with some of those exportable instrumentation initiatives that are going on. And the great part is that JPMRC out of Hawaii is doing an outstanding job. They're kind of leading through that. And so they're helping us. And I think that's the great thing about this, you know, First Army kind of bringing the OC enterprise together is our ability to leverage each other. So every year we have the best OCT competition, the General John J. Pershing Cup. This year it'll be at Fort Bliss, where it challenges them not only physically, but also cognitively in an OC environment. But while we're doing that, one of the things that we take advantage of is we do an OC symposium where we bring all of the OCs, OC organizations across the Army together, and we talk about what are the things that you're working on. So, for example, virtual training facilities, right? So when you start talking about, if you go to JRTC, and you're standing there watching training, and you're like, huh, what were the 7 steps of engagement area development? You can call back and talk to someone, and they'll give you the insight. They're also giving you the doctrinal answer, and they're also doing things like yours and doing other things. Those are great when you have a very static type of, you know, when you have an installation that does this over and over and over again. When you start talking about going to some of these Compo 2, Compo 3 installations that don't have this type of instrumentation, as First Army, build that feedback facility. Well, again, it's 2026, and I really think that AI and some of the other things that we have out there can be a huge asset. And so we're taking that into account. So that's something I'm really excited, is the way that we're using data, the way that we're taking the data and pushing it toward making training more effective. Something else that First Army has done, and I think that we're really proud of, and we're going to continue to evolve this, is we've developed something called blue paint. Single pane of glass blue, where you can go in and see things like TSR. If you're on classified network, then you can see the PSRT aggregate. What that does for us is it is pulled from system direct what the units are telling the Army the readiness that they're at. What's great about that for us is because we partner with over 5,000 different UICs with 3,000 OCs, it helps us really be able to help us focus in on what's important for that unit. So we can see everything from their maintenance status, to their personnel status, to how many are deployable and non-deployable, what training, you know, where they're at training-wise. And it gives us an opportunity. It's a much better jumping off point than just showing up at a weekend drill or an annual training AT and you know, trying to figure out what's going on helps us understand better. The next piece, the next evolution to that, that I'm really excited about is something parallel to what 4th Infantry Division is doing with Ivy Sting and their automated targeting, is for us to kind of go in and do the same thing and say, okay, now we've got blue paint, so we know where you're at. Well, I want, you only got 28 days left in the year. I need you to get to this. How do we build an automated training pipeline? We call it a novel training pipeline. With all the systems of record coming together, you get some agentic AI in there that can do things like reserve ranges for you and training aids and devices and all these other things that are going on. Or, hey, these are the resources that are not available, but it's all done for you for a commander to make decisions. You know, it's all those things to give you options, and it's to do it automated so you can, and the staff can concentrate on it.
As you get a chance today, what would you say to someone that's considering coming to First Army? What are the advantages of coming to your organization, and what are they going to learn working with a total force?
Yeah, so someone coming to First Army, here's what we're looking for. We're looking for someone that is operationally relevant, that is fit, that has a passion for training, and has a passion for relationship building and being able to build readiness across multi-components that you're not familiar with. So it's about someone being comfortable in an uncomfortable situation. The investment that we can give someone coming to First Army is multiple. Now, number one is we are currently at installations that are close to people's homes of record that normally are not Combo 1 installations. And so that's attractive for some people. What I would say from General Landis and myself, what our commitment is to the OC is we will send people to school. We will build the expertise. So the way we look at it is in year one, you being an OC in First Army, if you came to the position and there was an ASI on that position, battle staff, master gunner, et cetera, we've got to get you to those schools. We feel that, hey, we owe that to you. You committed to come here and into that position, and so therefore we owe you the ability to get certified in that position. So we say, hey, by year two, roughly, now we can do things like send you to a school that you weren't able to get in your last unit because of money or op tempo or other things. We want to send people to Ranger School. We want to send people to Master Gunner School. We want to send people to Air Assault School and other professionally developing schools for that soldier. And the commitment that the Commanding General and I have made is we will cancel other things before we do that, before we say, no, you can't do that. I will tell you that last year, 1 in 4 soldiers in First Army went to an ASI producing school. When you leave First Army, our goal is that a year from the time you leave, we hear things like, this is my best first sergeant in the brigade. This is my best field grade officer in the brigade. Those are the things that we hope to hear when you leave First Army. There are a lot of veterans out there from First Army that are walking amongst their formations now. In fact, every time I go talk to the Sergeant Major Academy, I'm shocked at how many I ask how many of you have served in First Army. And a lot of times, it's almost a third of the hands will go up. And so there's a lot of great things that can be offered in First Army. It's an opportunity for you to really take care of yourself while you're taking care of 52% of the Army.
You've talked about the OC Academy you have there at Rock Island. What other certification do you have or is ongoing with your organization that keeps your OCs up to date on the latest changes, whether it's doctrine, new equipment that's coming out that's going to help them as training aids? What is your ongoing process for making sure that as we're transforming the Army, that your OCs are ready to take that role of leading that training?
That's a great question because the Army is changing very, very quickly. And Combo 2 and 3 are changing in their own ways, not independent of the Army, but at different bases and different locations. I'll go back to what I said before. We will send people to school. Our in-house training and certification, have an OC Academy that's 5 days long, But that's just the baseline. Then they go back to their organizations, and my brigades of 10, one of the 10 brigades, or one of the 96 battalions inside the First Army, and they get separate training depending on what that brigade, what their upcoming mission is. This year I have a brigade that has two warfighters, two division warfighters that they've got trained. Most of the OCs this year are going to get division academic training. And so that helps certify them to be able to go and be effective advisors to a National Guard division that's getting ready to go somewhere. And that is the great part, because no 2 years are exactly the same around First Army. This year you may have division missions. Next year you may have brigade combat team missions. And oh, by the way, you're going to mobilize an ESC or a theater engineer command. It's never the same thing twice. And that's the great part about it. And so that training's got to be tailored to that, for those OCs to be certified to go out and do their job.
Excellent, Sergeant Major. As you look at that environment, how do you capture lessons from OCs that are doing the right thing, that are creating great training opportunities for their counterparts in the Guards and Reserve, and then export those out to other trainers across your force so that First Army is sharing that information? And then how are you sharing with the rest of the Army?
Yes, this is something that we're working really hard on right now, is how do we interface the call to make sure that we understand the repository side of it, while also collecting those lessons learned that we can internally use as we get ready to prepare. For example, we have the OIR OSS mission. And so how are we building those lessons learned to create a training environment so we can start it warplane instead of, hey, where is the unit at, where do we need to get to, and all those other things. We have that. We've done this, and we understand it. We are in the process of building our own repository that builds a large language model that then takes that and we can share that with the unit that's getting ready to train based on prior training, lessons learned, AARs, white papers, best practices, all those things we see out there. And so if I said, hey, I'm going to OC at Theater Engineer Command, give me the best practices that you saw. You know, what we're trying to do is figure out what's that right answer. How do we make sure the right stuff is in the queryable Army-wide database, and then what is something that we in First Army need to keep?
Okay, Sergeant Major, as you look at the evolution of a lot of systems that are out there based on large language models, the availability of AI, how do you see applying leadership to kind of transition from an Army that is, you know, was once all green notebooks and the personal leadership of the people next to you to an Army that is just more digitally connected? How are you doing that in First Army?
That is one of our big initiatives, is how do we get that virtual feedback, and how are we able to do things like get away from the green notebook? Because it's tough, right? I could look and say, hey, why do you not have the doctorate out here in the box while you're training? Well, they would have a stack of TNEOs 2 inches thick and 4 boxes of doctorate. Whereas if they're able to really be able to just kind of down and in, provide that honest feedback while using doctorate as a backbone that they're able to actually look at, be able to pull that off. I think that is a huge initiative for us. Us also being able to start with that blue vein and really understand where that unit's at, that is huge, because now we're not starting at zero. We're helping the command understand where we see them, where they can see themselves. And this blue vein is open to the entire Army. They can go any one of the Vantage account and go in there and look. To get away from a green notebook, especially on an ex-eval that we put a lot of resources into, and again, you start talking 39 days, the feedback has got to be very good, it's got to be actionable, and it's got to be on time. You're going to be more effective if you have a tool that you're able to kind of really pull things together using the power of AI and having the right data. And I think that's one of the key things that we need to be, as I think the whole Army is, right? How do we evaluate ourselves, period? How do we use AI to make ourselves more ready? I don't need AI to make more pictures. I need AI to take the data that I have and help me fill in the gaps. But then me as a leader, I got to be able to be the one that's making that judgment call. And also kind of understanding that, hey, maybe there's a little bit of hallucination in here, or some of this is not right. We have been able to take orders, processes from our plans and exercises from 4 people in 8 hours to 1 person in 1 hour, and then spending another hour just kind of refining the order. That's an example of us being able to get after making things a little more efficient. For us to be able to train that, it means we have to be able to get after it faster than them. That way we can demonstrate and be able to show them, hey, this is how this is going to work for you to be able to stay alive and to be lethal in combat. And I'll take this from two different sides. I'll take this from being able to leverage our soldiers to better leverage technology. So one of the things that we've given our brigades is we've told them to innovate. In fact, if you don't innovate, we're going to be wondering what you're doing. What most of the brigades have done is they found a young staff sergeant that has a 3D printer at home. And obviously, we have to resource some of the things for the unit, but now they're building their own drones at the unit because that staff sergeant is taking the initiative. They identified that talent. They identified the ability for that non-commissioned officer to be able to take a concept and to be able to actually create capability. So it's about finding the right people to be able to leverage within your formation to be able to leverage that innovation.
You've talked a little bit about the changing digital environment. What is the type of advice that you give to your sergeant first classes and your first sergeants as they prepare to become sergeant majors in the Army of the future so that they're able to do their job? What do you want them to know about their roles and responsibilities? What's changed? What stays the same? What do they need to do to be successful?
I will tell you that when I look at Army regulations, Army doctrine on the non-commissioned officer and what they're supposed to be, know, and do, I think one of the things that is not explicitly in there that I feel that I consistently have to talk about is ambiguity is good. Literally, we are the trainers of individuals, crews, and small teams. If you take that to heart, then you understand where your role is. Our NCOs that are planning to be sergeant major have to understand the operating environment. They have to understand the character and nature of war and how that is evolving over time. So you can't just be down and in. You have to understand what's going on. Again, going back to the unit training management piece, you have to understand unit training management from a doctrinal perspective because it actually works. And it's one of those things where you can take it and build on it. And then it helps you understand how to train your unit better to be more lethal. When we start talking about skills and behaviors, replicate, duplicate on the battlefield, or replicate, duplicate training, that a young non-commissioned officer with that mindset, with that mission command mindset, and understanding that, hey, I don't need a jammer to simulate jamming. I can just go grab the hand mic and key it and play music on it. So then that way we can get the behavior that we want, which is, hey, we know we're being jammed. Now we've got to hop to our other alternate frequency. Those kinds of things are critical to NCOs being creative, to being effective, setting, frankly, the right example. So if I don't necessarily need to train skills in that, meaning I don't have to duplicate, you know, a jammer on the battlefield because I want to train those behaviors. What it is that you're trying to get after, you're trying to get after that behavior or that skill, that really becomes a leader's question. And so when I look at the sergeant major, I'm going to ask that question. Are we going after skill or are we going after behavior? Because they're two different things. You start talking about today's battlefield, one-way attack drones. What is the behavior that I want to train to reduce complacency and reduce the risk to my soldiers? Well, I want them to be in full kit and I want them to be in the bunkers and I want them to stay until they're all clear. And I want, that's all behaviors, but their behaviors that keep your soldiers. I will tell a sergeant first class, any day to a sergeant major is embrace the ambiguity because it gives you latitude to be creative and to be effective because really at the end of the day, the accountability is still on you. I think in some ways, when I look at leaders using text messaging, for example, that is fine to put out information. That is not fine to lead. I think leaders just have to understand where that line is. I spend a lot of time on Teams, on the phone, not texting, but on the phone, talking to people, because I think that is what causes communication to actually be fully understood. Remember, it's the communicator, it's the receiver, it's the message. And so how do they understand that? You can't tell a tone. All you can tell is what's being said by words. Whereas if I'm actually speaking them to you, you can tell my body language, tell my tone, and you can understand a little bit more context about the situation. But I think leaders just have to not lead through digital systems, because you can't. And nobody's going to be able to tell me otherwise. You know what I mean?
Sergeant Major, as you reach out to the rest of the Army enterprise, what things could you use from a doctrine, a training, or a material perspective that would help you do your job at First Army better in trying to train and prepare the Guard and Reserve forces to be out there and execute their wartime mission?
Yeah, I think our doctrine is evolving pretty rapidly. I also appreciate the Army reducing the amount of business systems that we have to create, you know, these kind of different firewalls, and so you're able to aggregate a lot better. As you understand. What I do think that the Army can can work on a little bit is hey, as we move through TIC and we learn these lessons and Army Transformation Initiative and all these different changes that are going on, sometimes that does get stovepiped. And I am a fan of Call and Gillis and I think it's Victor and Quickfire and all these different systems, but these systems continually change and it makes it harder. I think that makes it harder for the operational force to kind of find it. I think we're doing a good job. I just think we can do better. We can be faster on getting the AI and some of these other enablers into the systems for us.
Okay, Sergeant Major, so as you look back at your time on First Army, what kind of things would you like to share with the rest of the force about how First Army contributes to the total force, what you're going to take away from your assignment there?
I will tell you that in my career, I've had three pivotal points. I used to say two, and it was being a platoon sergeant, being a battalion CSM, now being the First Army CSM. A lot of people don't understand that within the Army Guard is eight more divisions, combat divisions. Don't understand that 80% of our logistics resides inside of Combo 3 or U.S. Army Reserves. I used to think I knew a little bit. I didn't know anything. But really what gave me the satisfaction is watching young OCs come to First Army, turn around and leave 3 years later and just be phenomenal trainers. Again, if you go back to what a non-commissioned officer is, it is, by doctrine, a trainer of individual crews and small teams. We ask our NCOs to do two things, train our soldiers and take care of our soldiers. There's a lot of other things inside of there. I'm not saying there isn't, but what an opportunity for someone to come be an OC, see many different units, conduct things many different ways, and then to be able to take that back out to the operational force to be effective leaders at all echelons. I will cherish my time at First Army. It's the longest that I've been anywhere as a nominative sergeant major. I'll tell you, I believe in the mission and I believe in what we do.
Sergeant Major Prosser, thank you for joining us and sharing your insights. Today we discussed lessons learned from the Command Sergeant Major of First Army. You can find resources available by going to www.army.mil/call, our CAC-enabled site. There you may download products and request print products shipped to you. For more insights on topics discussed today, see Call's First 100 Days of NCO, First 100 Days XOS3, Leveraging Sergeant Majors and Command Sergeant Majors, as well as Episode 2 of Insights from the Fight, NCO Roles and Developing Training. If you have trouble finding information on our website, use the Request for Information tab and receive direct feedback from an analyst at Call. Finally, if you have a best practice to submit, or a capability gap that requires a .MILPF solution, submit observations directly to Call using a Quickfire portal on our website. Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media. I'd like to thank all of our Call team members. Special thanks to Mr. Mike Robinson, who is working on roles, responsibilities, and functions of senior NCOs in large-scale combat operations. And finally, Ms. Paige Cox, our show's producer. Thank you for listening to the Insights from the Fight podcast. We are dedicated to providing you with the insights you need to lead, train, and fight today and in the future. Join us next time for another discussion on lessons learned from the force.